We are doing Drashot Aran, and the Ran left us off with an explanation of the concept of the power of the congregation, the power of Tzivu. And the Ran said that when you have individuals that have the same tchunot, that have the same characteristics, so then they strengthen one another, for good or for bad. And when they have different tchunot, when they have different characteristics, so even though each person has his own weaknesses, but we cover up for one another. And the Tzivu, as a whole, being that we have different chesonot, we have different faults, so then together we are much more powerful than alone. If we unite a bunch of people that have the same fault, you take together 50 murderers, you have yourself a mob. But if you take together 50 people, and one person he's lazy, another person he's a thief, and the third person he gets angry, so each one has their own fault, but together they cover up for one another's fault, and they could be a much better unity once they're a group.
But they need a strong leadership for consolidation.
We'll get to that. It's a good point. Yeah.
It's kind of contradictory. We learn from missing no?
No, what?
That like-minded people should.
Interesting. Okay. I think that Rav Nissim Gaon was talking at a different point. Rav Nissim Gaon meant if you come from a family of millionaires and you marry a girl that grew up with barely one dress, so you're going to have a different perspective on life. There are going to be complications. It can work. It might work beautifully, but it's going to be difficult. If you grew up in the Midwest and you come to a place where people come from Mozambique, so you're going to sit down to eat and they're going to walk out of the toilet and they're not going to wash their hands. So you're going to be grossed out sitting down and eating with them. They're used to one way of life and you're used to a different way of life. Now, I'm telling you examples from real life. Tell you stories. We had guests in our house that I didn't know if it's right to ask them to wash their hands after going to the bathroom or not. You don't want to embarrass the person, but on the other hand, you don't want to eat the food after they're touching it. So, okay, what are you going to do? Okay. Right, I agree. Okay, so that's what Nissim Gaon is talking about. I think. I don't think it contradicts what we just said here. Okay, back to Nissim Gaon. So we're holding on page 5. In the Hotzat Shalim, and Rav Nissim Gaon says like this: this was the concept of the Dor HaPalagan, their punishment. Rav Nissim Gaon is going to enter, and this is classical. Not Rav Nissim Gaon. I'm sorry. The Ran is entering an issue which you read all the other commentaries, you get stuck. It's a very unclear what happened with that generation. They unified, they built a tower. God was upset at them and scattered them. And it's not clear what their intent was, and it's not clear what was the punishment, and why they needed to be punished. And Rav Nissim, the Ran, as we will see, his style is to take on such difficult sugiyot, and in passing explain them. This is one drasha, and in passing he's going to explain to us a bunch of sugiyot like that. So this is one of them. He says, the generation of the Palaga, the generation of the Tower of Babel, this was the idea, and this was their punishment. That if you look at the commentaries, they left us in the dark. So it reaches a point where we're almost walking like blind people, trying to figure out what's going on. Because these people, what they do? Where did they rebel? Where did they sin? What are you going to say? The verses say they wanted to unite. Okay. So God should have given them good wages. You have a group of people, they say, let's unite. That's what the Torah tells us. He had a group of people, they said, let's unite in Babylon. They united, they built a tower, and God said, oy, 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 they're building a tower, I'm going to punish them. What's wrong? They want to unite. They should have gotten good wages for that. The verses all seem to indicate in this direction. That if people unite, God approves of it. Remember, the Ran is discussing the concept of a tzibur, of a congregation uniting. So he's saying, these people united, they should have gotten schar for that. Our sages even told us, afilu avdei avodah zarah, kol zman shehashalom benehem, en midat hadin mtucha kenegdam. Our sages taught us that even people who worship idols, if there's peace between them, if they can unite, then God does not go with justice against them. And our sages aligned this with the verse, v'esmichu etzeh la pasuk, chabu ratzabim epayim hanachlo. They aligned it to that verse. And even though when you read the Midrashim, there seems to be reasons given it to their punishment, these Midrashim don't really work well with Pshat in the Pesukim. Because the Medrash that says, why did they build the tower? They wanted to ascend to the heavens.
Yeah.
That seems ridiculous. It's really wondrous. The whole world united to do something so foolish, to climb up to the sky? And if you'll tell me, yes, the whole world united to do such a foolish thing, they all thought, we'll make it up to the heavens, so then they were stupid. Stupid people don't have to be punished. The Ram says, what are you going to say? They were all stupid.
But
what are you punishing them for?
But it is sin of corner, of pride against God.
Let's see. So far he hasn't discussed it. Let's see. And on things like this, the verse says, God laughs, God mocks people when they do things like that. But to punish them, and furthermore, if you'll say they went against the most basic point, they want to fight God, if that's what you're going to say, that they all wanted to go fight God, so then why did God only scatter them? How is that a fitting punishment? Why is that enough? And furthermore, you read the verses, God says, this is what they've done, and they've only just begun. So I have to punish them if this is where they're headed. It seems like they were punished for what they were going to do, not what they had done so far. It seems like the punishment was for a future act. But rather, the punishment was about the outcome, where their actions would lead. And that's what the verse says. Behold, they're one nation. They all speak one language. And this is what they've begun to do. And now, nothing, once they've gotten this far, so they could, nothing's going to hold them back from going further. This verse clearly indicates that the punishment was not for what they had already done, but rather the punishment was, so to speak, out of worry from what they might still do in the future, what new things they do. And all of these lead an intelligent person to be perplexed and require explanation. And all of this goes back to the principle that we discussed, that when you unite the wicked, so then it's something that's harmful. Hen bet ishtadlam befulat ratam, regardless whether they're trying to do something bad, or lo ishtadlu ba, or they're not, the mere fact that you have a unification of evil is already a bad thing to the world. Just as we explained earlier, that the unification of good is something that's beneficial. Hen bet ishtadlutam o bet yenuhu, regardless whether they're trying to do something or they're just at rest, the mere fact that good has united is something beneficial to the world. As is alluded in the verse, even if two are just at rest together, they're warmer by the mere fact that they're together, as the Ram explained 2 weeks ago. But this is the concept of what happened with this generation that was scattered. Undoubtedly, in that time, the world was based on mistaken philosophies. What they all agreed on was that they should be serving idols. They were all pagans. So the Ran is saying, at that time, the world was in agreement that they should serve idols. The only exception were the exceptional people. They recognized the light of the world that was good. Notice that the Ran seems to be going in a slightly different path than the Drashat Ramban that we're learning, Torat Hashem Tmima. The Ramban had stressed that from the time of Noah till the time of Moshe, everyone knew that God created the world. They might have served idols, but it was Bishituf. There was no person on earth that didn't recognize that God was running the world. Any Avodah Zarah was b'shituf. You remember, we saw that in the Drashat Ramban. Shituf is that they believe in God, but they also believe in this force. They'll serve this force. The Ran is saying that everyone agreed they serve idols. The exceptions were the people who recognized that they should be serving Hashem, that they should not be serving idols. And the exceptional people who were monotheistic, they did not have enough power to call people to serve Hashem together. They They lived in fear of the nations that they were living in their land. The nations had the power. Ad she'arishon she'etchil zeh v'hu Avram, till the first who started this, now is Avram, kara lo ma shekara im Nimrod. You see what happened. Avram started telling people, serve Hashem, leave the idol worship. Nimrod tried to have him executed. Ad she'u tzach la'azov arzo. And at the end, even though he was saved miraculously, bottom line, Avram had to leave. He couldn't stick around in Nimrod's territory. So Avram tries to tell people, don't serve idols, and what happens? He's almost executed, and he has to leave. V'lelech te'lel tzachet. He has to go to another land. Ve'en safek yotam tzadikim asher yu ha'yichidim bedorot ahim. And undoubtedly, those that were righteous in those generations, hayalem chiluk ha'umot v'hamemshalot letov v'letoelet. The fact that the nations were not united, that there were different governments, was to their benefit. The world is not united. So if the world is prosecuting the monotheists in the Assyrian Empire, they could go to another area. They could go to Canaan. They could go to Mitzrayim. Ki kasher tetzer lehem ha'umah beze malchut, when one kingdom is persecuting them, yishotetu le'eretz acheret, they could travel to another land. Sheyuchlu sham la'avod Hashem yitbach kirtzonam. And in that land, they have a period of peace where they could serve Hashem. Kasher kara lanu begalotenu hayom. That's what happened to us in our exile today. Ki kasher nitchadesh shmat be'eretz Yishmael, when they started persecuting us and having rules against maintaining Judaism in the Arab lands, yanusu pliteim le'eretz acheret. So people ran away from the Arab lands to other lands. And when they started being persecuted with the Crusades, umisham nishma, they ran back to the Arab territory. And this gives us assessments, allows us to live a little bit in the situation where we're being so afflicted. Now, where are things headed? And this is what where we'll pick up next week. That at that time, everyone was united with building a tower. And when they were united, if you have a United Nations that's so powerful that everyone's going to be united with the same laws, then this is going to pose a threat for those like Avram, that now they're going to have no place to run. Because that's what we're going to pick up next week, Bezrat Hashem, that the unification was together with the thoughts of idol worship, and the unification was headed in a direction where it would be impossible for those that were monotheists to remain around.
So, what it was...
Just a second, show on something, yeah?
So, isn't that the direction, the wrong, and the wrong bottom, that's the direct contradiction? Because they served, they're united in idol worship, but not necessarily in the Nile, a kind of horrible.
Okay. The reason I thought that the Ran and the Ramban seem to be differing is because the Ran presents it that those that were monotheists were the exception. And according to the Ramban, it seems like even though they weren't monotheists, but the recognition of Hashem was not exceptional. The Ran seems to say it was.
The recognition of Hashem or Hashemonus?
I'm not sure how to read that. I'm not sure. To me, it seemed more like the recognition of Hashem. But he uses poetic terminology. He says, those that the light shone upon, those that recognized Hashem. So I'm not sure.
So it is not right that if people gather together for idol worship and between them shalom, God not just, does not...
usually the fact that there's peace between people is a positive thing, even if they're sinners. The Ran is going to have to discuss why here it was an exception. Why here, even though they were unified, God saw a need to intervene and not only intervene, but scatter them. The exact opposite of this positive trait. Here they were unified. And God says, this is a problem, I have to scatter them.
But in any case, if it is gathering for idol worship, it must be destructive.
Let's see which way the Ran goes.
It was this Canaanite people, and this Navim, that's Eliyahu, Navi killed.
So that's where our sages tell us, that generation of Eliyahu and Navi, the generation of Achav, that were all idol worshippers, when they'd go out to war, they wouldn't lose a soldier. Every time they went out to war, not only would they win the war, but they didn't lose a soldier, to the point that Achav ruled over the whole world. Achav was king over the whole world. Now, here you have a king, he married a woman from a non-Jewish nation. he's brought in idol worship. He's killing out the prophets of Hashem. Why is he so successful? So our sages ask, how come he was so successful? And they say, because there was one good trait among the Jewish people at that time. The Jewish people were serving idols, but they were unified. Even though they were serving idols, but in their behavior, in their day-to-day behavior, they were behaving nicely to one another. They wouldn't tell on one another. When Elio is hiding, when Ovadia is hiding 100 prophets behind Achav's back, no Jew went to Achav and said, hey Achav, you know, there are 100 prophets hiding in the cave. They could have been buddy-buddy with Achav. You know, in politics, what do people do all the time? They stab someone else in the back so they'll move one step forward. It's always that case. People can justify what they did when they have their own interests. That's politics. We see it every day. Push the other guy down so you can move one step up. And yet in Achav's time, not one Jew stepped forward to the extent that Elio could stand in front of the masses of Jewish people and say, I alone remain the prophet for Hashem. And no one says a word. Everyone knows he's lying. The whole congregation but Achav and Izevel knows he's lying. And everyone stands there silent. So our sages say, from here we see what kind of good traits they had. The peace that reigned in Achav's in the land of Israel at the time. They had such peace, Hashem said, if they're unified and they behave nicely to one another, so then when they go out to war, I don't let a single soldier fall, even though they're idol worshippers.
Okay, so for the sake of the peace, God can let to be idol, even idol.
It doesn't say Hashem lets. It says Hashem doesn't bring his court into, Hashem doesn't convene his court to judge against them. That's wrong, that they're serving idols. But the peace is so valuable that when there is peace between them, Hashem, so to speak, says,
yeah,
let them have it.
Hashem so. Be, is try, temporary. It's
okay. Yeah.
The Ron, that's the point seems to be that the Babel was the predecessor of the UN.
I don't know about that. Let's see. The Ron is in the middle. We stopped in mid sentence.
There's an organization that everyone can come together to denounce the one monotheistic nation.
It's an interesting point.
Do you still think that it looks like a 16th century drawing of the or above it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Take it out of the
month. Interesting. Okay. We're really a little bit out of time, so we're only